For Issues and Ideas, I'm Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. And in honor of Mother's Day, I'm calling for a ceasefire in this current war on women. There's been nothing but nonstop slinging of blame by both political parties, each claiming to be the true voice for American women, stirring up a lot of angry debate amongst politicians and hours of screaming by pundits and self-proclaimed experts on every major and minor news source. And in case you missed it, here's the brief recap. Over the course of the last 2 years, more than 1,000 bills have been introduced across the United States which are aimed directly at women, some targeting limits to reproductive rights, others reducing access to health care services. There are proposals to repeal aid for low-income pregnant women and efforts to cut funding for children's programs. Democrats have not so subtly pointed out that all of these bills have been proposed by Republicans, who in turn claim that these actions are not examples of a war against women, but are instead bold steps toward fiscal responsibility. In turn, Republicans have accused Democrats of starting this fight merely for political gain. It is an election year, after all. So yes, it is loud and it is nasty. But this war on women has not only pit party against party, it's also reignited another battle, one that's been quietly raging since the second wave of feminism swept through this country in the late 1960s, pitting woman against woman. On one side are the feminists advocating for gender equality, and on the other, conservative women fighting for the return to or maintenance of more traditional roles and values. Both believe that they speak for and understand what is in the best interest of women. And at the center of this conflict is the argument regarding motherhood and how it is we define and determine what it takes to be a good mother. The second wave of feminism was, in the simplest of terms, a movement aimed to address gender inequities in pay and access to better career opportunities. But it was more than just an issue of pay. Women of the late 60s, early 70s were railing against the sterile and oppressive one-dimensional roles relegated to the wives and mothers of the post-war 50s. Wanting more stimulation than the Leave It to Beaver, House in the Suburbs, cookie and milk existence of housewives, the second wave of feminism was a call to arms of the privileged middle class who wanted out of the kitchen and into the boardroom. So, inspired by the vision of leaders like Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan and their promise that women could and should have it all, career, marriage, home, and family, women threw off their aprons, grabbed a briefcase, and rushed off to work. This liberation brought about changes not only in the corporate world, but also in politics, in athletics, and in the bedroom. With the introduction of the pill, women enjoyed more sexual freedom and reproductive control and were better able to determine when and if they would become mothers. Women gained greater access to sports and college scholarships thanks to Title IX, and the business world was quickly altered by the appearance of power-suited women in high-level positions. And aside from continued struggles to break through certain glass ceilings and an ongoing gender gap in pay for equal employment, after 40 years, this grand social experiment has brought many incredible gains to the next generation. Most young women today have no idea of the freedoms and opportunities they enjoy thanks to the efforts and sacrifices made by the feminists who paved the way. But for all of the gains, there were also the unintended consequences associated with the second wave. Divorces peaked at the onset of the feminist movement, a result of the rapidly changing expectations by both women and men regarding marriage, which put a strain on more traditional unions. Women were encouraged to reject anything that resembled the perceived self-sacrifice and servitude associated with traditional homemaking. And although marriages have actually stabilized in the last 25 years, the repercussions of these divorces and the impact they had on the children who have now grown into adults and begun their own families has been part of the reason for the current distancing from and rejection of feminism by many of today's young women. Although the majority of these women would consider themselves socially liberal who support equality for all, they also view feminists as aggressive, anti-male, anti-family, and anti-motherhood. And I believe that it is in great part this perception that has led to the disconnect between this millennial generation and their feminist founding mothers. I was reminded of this intergenerational discord this week when I came across an interview in the Globe and Mail with French feminist and intellectual Elizabeth Badinter speaking about her book, The Conflict, which argues that today's generation of women face a new form of oppression, trying to be a perfect mother. Ms. Badinter claims that modern motherhood, with its emphasis on natural parenting and all of the work involved, is a return to the oppressive motherhood associated with her great-grandmother's generation. The Conflict claims that modern motherhood undermines the status of women and that following a model of motherhood as a full-time job robs women of their own time and freedom. Young modern mothers are choosing to take time off from work to give their children more focused attention, which Ms. Badinter believes will only set back the cause of attaining equality between the sexes and independence for women. The interview reminded me how I felt as a young mother, and how many women of my generation felt when faced with the same sort of pressure from feminists who expected all of us college-educated women to pursue a full-time career while raising our children because they had fought for our right to have it all. The argument was that it was a waste of our college degree to only stay at home and raise children, which I thought then and still believe today is the craziest of ideas. Who better to raise your children than someone with a college degree? I think the biggest mistake of the second wave was their blanket rejection and devaluing of motherhood as a viable life choice, which set up this great cultural divide between women and ultimately weakened our ability to fight great social inequalities. We were all so busy defending our choices, those who stayed at home, those who pursued careers, and those who did both, children and careers, we were so busy taking pot shots at each other that we missed great opportunities to build a culture that was supportive of all people and all of their choices. It's unfortunate that early feminists were in such a hurry to get out of the house that they did so by stepping on the backs of women who still felt the call of traditional motherhood. This only furthered to demean the value of motherhood in the greater culture, reducing the perception of the job as being nothing more than caregiver, instead of what it actually is, the job of raising a human being and all that goes into mentoring, guiding, nurturing, educating, disciplining, inspiring, coaching, and caring for the next generation. But when feminists rejected full-time motherhood as an oppressive, time-sucking impediment to personal ambition and independence, motherhood became a role viewed as being beneath an educated woman. Motherhood was something that you hired out. But even with the assurances from our mentors that it was all going to be okay, full-time childcare, 80-hour work weeks, crumbling marriages, on some level, women were finding out that although we had the freedom to do it all, it was next to impossible to do it all well. And that is what this new generation of mothers is responding to. They understand that trying to do it all at once and feeling that you are failing at everything is not worth the trade-off. So instead of creating yet another generation of battling women, Ms. Badinter and the second wave of activists should be working to change the negative perception of feminists and fighting to improve the quality of life of all people, women, men, and children. This third wave of feminists is much more interested in quality of life issues, finding balance in their work, their life, and their relationships, and enjoying equality within marriages as well as the workplace. I believe that modern mothers and fathers understand the value of parenting and family in a way that gives me great hope for the future. They've learned the lessons of their mother's generation and are making their own way as partners, not adversaries. If second-wave feminists want to find relevance in this new debate, they'll have to stop trying to bully young women into continuing to fight their battles and find a way to build bridges and support this new generation as they work to reverse what they believe to be the damage done to children and families as a result of the feminist battle for equality. As long as old-school feminists continue to reject any semblance of traditional roles in family, conservative women will continue to be perceived to be the lone voices in support of women, children, and families, which will by default allow women to continue being victimized as a gender by the social agenda being pursued by conservative Republicans. Because ultimately, the only way we are going to win this war on women is to all come together and fight. Young mothers, conservative women, and feminists battling as a united front utilizing all of our 51% majority. And this has been another Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. For issues and ideas, I'm Elizabeth Barrett.